Upload complete. The info contained in this drop is available only for 20 seconds per cycle. We'll cycle at random times to avoid detection. My assumption is that if you are hearing this, you have a team and are able and willing to accept the job. Name's Opti, Fixer, Shadowrunner, Informational Anarchist, but today I'm Mr. Johnson. I hold to the belief that the more prepared a team is, the smoother the run, so I'm going to drop all I can about this mission before I send you out. Mission concerns the gang known as the First Nations. When the info dump is through, I'll give you the details of the run. The First Nations are a top-tier go-gang. Top-tier meaning that they're a gang that has a heavy power base in more than one sprawl. In the case of the First Nations, they have extended all over Seattle and have been growing like weeds into the Nan countries. Specifically, they've run in Denver, various Salishe cities, mostly around Seattle, and I've heard that they've moved fairly aggressively into Cheyenne, Wyoming, and the Sioux Nation, as well as the surrounding areas. Much in the same way as the Ancients, the First Nations have an exclusive membership. While the Ancients divide between elf and non-elf, the First Nations only accept metahumans of Native American descent. My best guess is that there are over 1,000 Nation gangers in Seattle alone, with about 4,000 total First Nation gangers spread out over the Nan countries. The First Nations paint their faces and dress in culturally traditional Amerindian clothes, whether they're authentic or accurate. Stuff like leather, hides with beads, feathers, all that stuff. Almost all of them wear raven feathers and skin of coyotes. They don't always wear particular colors, but when they do, it's a turquoise blue and most often reflected in their war paint. The symbol that they wear is a stylized mask with raven flying over a howling coyote. The First Nations started off in the late 30s or 40s. Some say it was Blood of the Buffalo who started the gang, but I've heard others suggest that a powerful free city spirit was the one who organized first. Either way, in the late 2040s, the Yakuza went to Seattle looking for pawns to use against the Silver Rings who were making inroads into their turf. The local Yakuza, the Shotozumi Rengo, began to promise the First Nations a spot as their prime distributor of chips and beetles in Seattle if they could just prove themselves worthy. The Yakuza spoke to their leader, called Blood of the Buffalo, about how their culture shared a nobility and an honor among warriors. Blood of the Buffalo saw this as an opportunity to build his power base and make the First Nations the premier gang of all native peoples. In the 2050s, the First Nations spent most of their time around Seattle's docks, fighting with the Chosun Solpa Ring and the Red Rovers over Shotozumi Rengo Biz. They expanded into the north area of the old Renraku Arcology and made inroads into Everett's waterfront area as well. The Yaks continued to supply the First Nations with weapons and products for decades, always holding out the promise of increasing their status and making them the top underground force, but nothing the First Nations ever did seemed good enough for the Shotozumi Rengo. Finally, in 2070, they broke off their codependent relationship with the Yaks and became free again, at least for a time. Initially, the First Nations snuggled in close to the Pueblo gang-slash-crime syndicate known as the Koshari, who the Ancients have also allied with to some extent. This made some amount of sense since it was about this time that they also began to cozy up with the Dogmen, a Salish crime outfit focused on smuggling. The First Nations made a push into Redmond's Verge on the edge of Salishe territory, perfect to get illegal stuff in and out of Seattle from the neighboring Nan countries. This all-Native American alliance was proving lucrative for a time, but soon the First Nations grew even more powerful. Late in 2071, the First Nations accepted an offer from a branch of the Solpa Rings called the Komen-go to merge into one large syndicate between the Komen-go, the Dogmen, and the First Nations. With their assets and contacts merged into one, the First Nations became the foot soldiers and the street-level distributors and dealers for drugs and tech. Unlike when they worked for the Yaks, this time Blood of the Buffalo had a place at the leadership table and was treated with respect. Part of that is due to the fact that the Komen-go is run by a half-Korean, half-Native American named Chulsan Greywolf. The Dogmen, also being Amerind, means that the Korean-Amerindian alliance was solid from the beginning. The Chosun Solpa Ring did not forget their earlier encounters with the First Nations, but have been instructed to move past it for the sake of profits. Blood of the Buffalo seemed poised to get his dream of expanding the First Nations across the Nan Nations, but hit something of a roadblock with his alleged allies, the Koshari, who apparently had no interest in the First Nations moving into Pueblo territory. Once it became clear that this was happening, the relationship between the First Nations and the Koshari became frigid. The first violence over this came when the First Nations moved into Denver. The Dogmen and First Nations were at the pinnacle of the tempo trade in the early 2070s, and Denver was a logical market for them to move into. The Koshari didn't see it the same way. Gunfights between the First Nations and the Koshari broke out all over the city. Other incidents in Denver and other cities surrounding have caused the Koshari to break alliance with the First Nations. For the moment, the Ancients still have an uneasy alliance with the First Nations, but Ghost knows how long that's going to last. At the height of the Tempo madness, the First Nations were at the apex of the demand chain. It's impossible to overstate exactly how much Nuyen guns and Tempo flowed through North America under their control. And while Tempo may have calmed down a bit, the influence gained by the First Nations and their continuing alliance with the Dogmen and the Komen-Go Ring has placed them on an entirely new level of influence. As it now stands, the Native American Korean Syndicate is having the run of the Pacific Northwest as far as the drug trade goes. As I mentioned, the First Nations are led by a Salish elf called Blood of the Buffalo. He has been reported as both a powerful shaman and a powerful physical adept in the way of the warrior. Not sure which is true or if they both are. Sorry, chummers. If I was a betting man, though, I'd say mystic adept. Under him are three main lieutenants. Two twin human female shamans act as the spiritual leaders of the First Nations. Windwalker follows Coyote, and her sister Windrider follows Raven. Last, there is Moonhawk, who is sporting some high-grade wired reflexes and no shortage of high-powered firearms. First Nation gangers are encouraged to get military training from Nan Nations, and in doing so, both learn how to train others in combat and tactics, but also to gain access to military facilities which they sometimes use to train other First Nation gangers. To become a full-fledged member, a First Nation ganger must first spend 48 hours in a sweat lodge before being dropped off into a Salishi wilderness. The ganger then has 48 hours to make it to a pre-assigned location within the city, showing their mastery over enemies both natural and metahuman. After success, the ganger gets a tattoo with the gang symbol on it on one arm, and a tattoo reflecting the vision that he saw while on the quest on the other. That's all I got on the First Nations. Here's the job offer. The pay is 12,000 Nuyen per runner, flat. No negotiation here, chummer. Take it or leave it. Tell your face I'm sorry, as tailored pheromones and sweet talk aren't going to work here. The job is Extraction Plus. First Nations used to have a shaman called Walks with Spirits as their spiritual leader. He hasn't been seen or heard from since the twins took over the position. Now, it's possible that Wolf and Raven have a joint interest in the fate of the First Nations gang, or it could be that these twins chose Wolf and Raven rather than the other way around. Either way, I want to know what happened to Walks with Spirits. Walks with Spirits was last seen in the Verge in Redmond near the Salish border, so that's where I'd start looking. The Verge is pretty dangerous, so expect tons of gang activity along the way and possibly facing Dogmen or First Nations gangers when you arrive. If Walks with Spirits is alive and doing fine, just report in. Easy. If he's dead, same thing. Just report back. If he's alive but not free, extract him. I'll tell you where to bring him in a second. The second part of the job is to disrupt First Nations smuggling routes in Redmond. Now, I know this is dangerous stuff. If you can significantly disrupt their operations, specifically along the 520 freeway, there's an extra 20,000 Nuyen in it for you each. Let me be clear, I don't need this done, but I really would like to see it. I know it's a tall order, so only do what you can do. When you have the information on Walks with Spirits, or if you have the man himself, bring it to the Jackal's Lantern in Redmond. Ask for a dwarf named Stubbs. He's a former Halloweener, but he's still an honorary weener, even though he mostly runs the shadows these days. Stubbs and his associate, Deadeye, will take whatever information or extraction you have and verify your work in real time. They'll give you the Nuyen. Stubbs is cool. Don't try to negotiate with Deadeye. And don't make any sudden moves. He's not the most social. That's what you need for the job. Go be bad for money.